Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science. You've come to the right place. Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
You know, I was somewhat impressed with actress Anna Faris's recent admission that maybe she shouldn't have presented her marriage to Chris Pratt as all sunshine and roses. You know, the truth is that there is no perfect marriage. No two people can be in any relationship that doesn't have some challenges. And it's why I have such a problem with the black hole that an actual marriage seems to fall into, because you have rom-coms and fairy tales ending with the couple riding off into happily ever after, and then the next thing we see is the breakups. And the most important part of that relationship is practically invisible. So it's no wonder so many marriages that start out so great end up running into a ditch. Now, we're told marriage is hard work, but somehow think there's something wrong with ours when it isn't smooth sailing. And as I said before, the truth is no marriage is immune from rough seas. What keeps the successful ones afloat is the willingness to face the difficulties head on and fight as hard as you can to ride them out. And my guest today did just that. Because they're both psychotherapists and relationship counselors, you might think they had a head start. And, you know, maybe they did, but as they openly share in their book, That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places, Charlie and Linda Bloom's marriage wasn't immune. So, guys, Charlie and Linda, thank you so much for coming on the show and talking about this, your wonderful book, because you know, everybody, especially in the days of social media with Facebook and Instagram and Pinterest and Twitter and blah, 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 everybody puts their best foot and face forward, and nobody sees the cracks.
Well, I'm delighted to be on the show. Thank you very much, Leslie, for inviting us.
Well, me too, and appreciate what you said about the book, and I hope that other people can appreciate that aspect of it, that we're kind of trying to illuminate some myths that many of us have about marriage and relationships that kind of can set us up for disappointment if we're not aware. Not only that, you know, there is some work that all relationships require in order for them to really thrive, but actually what their particular work is, because there's no generic answer to the question of, well, what is the work that I need to do in order to have the best possible relationship? We all have different aspects of it that we need to focus on, and our book is just an example of two people's struggle to not only find out what and how we needed to be in order to deal with, as you say, the inevitable challenges of all relationships.
Well, and one of the things is, and you know, your book is so raw and honest, and it covers so much, it's going to be a real challenge to get to the most important aspects of it. But when I was reading it, one thing really jumped out at me, and, you know, it's most people today, and my 22-year-old daughter just got engaged a couple of weeks ago, so I'm kind of like, okay, honey, even though she's been my, you know, been my daughter and grown up around a relationship expert, quote-unquote, you know, she's even facing some questions. So, you know, and what a lot of couples now want to do is have what's called an egalitarian marriage and try to throw out, you know, the traditional roles that people were locked into for so many years. But one of the things that struck me is that you guys wanted to do that too, that you really wanted to end up having an egalitarian marriage, but you ended up both falling prey to your to the traditional role expectations, Charlie, you of the man, and Linda, you of the woman. And I think this can come as a really big surprise to people. So why does this happen, and is there really any way to avoid it?
I think that there is a way to avoid it partially. And if you can make an agreement and that's part of your holy vows, it will take you away, take you part of the way. But life is full of surprises, and marriage is just all on-the-job training. So when the inevitable surprises come, and you might find that one of the surprises is that despite your determination, and I was a rabid feminist at the time, and I was really dedicated to wanting to have both of our careers be successful and mutually support our career development and to co-parent the children and share the housework, and I was really dedicated to that. But when Charlie took that corporate job, he was in a culture that was very masculine and kind of a patriarchal system, and it challenged us to be able to find our way to keep the balance of male and female equality in place, and especially to keep the work and the family life balance in place.
And I'm so glad you said that, because a lot of people talk about work-life balance, and it's like, wait a minute, work is part of life, but it's really, it's the work-home or the work-family balance, which, you know, in this day and age of 24/7 accessibility, it makes it even crazier.
You're absolutely right, and crazy is not too dramatic a word to use for it. Despite the holy vows that we took, and we had been living our life very much like that for the 12 years before he entered the corporate mentality, which was very much about defining success as power and influence and dominance and money, and not defining success as loving relationships. So it was about that definition of success that overpowered what in our marrow of our bones we knew to be true. And it was really just going against the grain. It was swimming upstream. It was really very difficult to buck the system during that time. And when Charlie finally left the corporate culture and we were able to start our own business and create our own hierarchy of what was important, which had heart and meaning for us, we were able to put family and romantic partnership in the number one spot. And that work is to support that, not family to support professional achievements.
Well, and that's a really interesting point, and I do think that the generation that's coming up now is really challenging some of that corporate mentality and really wanting to be able to, you know, enjoy life. And, you know, and I was just watching a Michael Moore film where he was in Europe, and, you know, the way the Europeans are much more family-oriented in terms of their culture than we are here in America. So it is possible. It's nice to know that it is possible, but I do think, like you said, people have to be very intentional about it. And even when you start out being intentional, as the two of you did, you almost like have to constantly be on guard and watching.
Yeah, you're right on with that. Absolutely. Even when you are intentional and you anticipate the challenge of creating that kind of a relationship, a real co-equal partnership in a culture that does not seem to value that nor support it. In fact, in some ways, what I found is that in my job and in most corporate jobs, there's a strong influence away from family support and a strong encouragement to have the, like you say, 24/7 availability on the phone, and to have everything, including your family life, be secondary to your loyalty and allegiance to the company. It's a major undertaking. It's a huge challenge, and most of us underestimate just how much pressure there's going to be from the outside to pull us into that mindset.
Well, exactly. And there's something else that you talk about, and I found this a really interesting thing, especially because of the work that I do and also knowing the work that you guys do. As a real turning point in your guys' life, you talk about the personal growth seminars that you attended as kind of being the start of the challenging time. But then as you get back to the end of the book and how you guys came back together, you kind of come full circle to the importance of doing your own individual work in order to repair the marriage. So is there a balance couples should be seeking somehow between the individual work and the relationship? Or, I mean, because it was a really interesting arc that you guys went through.
And it was a steep learning curve for us. And I think that's one of the reasons that we're as effective at what we do, because we learned it in the trenches. We didn't learn it out of a book. And I had my attention too much on Charlie. And when I got my attention off of him and what he was doing and not doing and saying and not saying, and I got my attention on myself and I did some work of my own personal growth, that I needed to become a better communicator. I needed to negotiate for my needs in a more artful way. I needed to learn how to regulate my anger that was just burning me up. One of my chapters is called Mind on Fire. It was making an already difficult, challenging situation more difficult because we fought so much during that time. We had an irreconcilable difference, and instead of making him bad and wrong for being away from the family and building his career so much, I needed to learn how to calm myself down, to ground myself, to center myself, to see the beauty that was still there in our relationship rather than being overwhelmed with the resentment that I was feeling because I was so attached to what our marriage had to look like. And so when I started to do more personal work and grow the kind of self-discipline, to grow in letting go of my attachments, to grow in forgiveness and acceptance and tolerance, I was able to make the little bit of time that we did have together with his flying all over the country in Canada really count, so that we weren't arguing during the little time that it was home, that we were really enjoying our relationship and family life. And that made all the difference. So I don't see it as either work on the relationship and get your communication skills and your negotiation skills and your conflict management skills up. And I don't see it as just do your own work. I'm from the both and school of thought.
And I'm right there with you. For me, it's like either or is false. It has to be both and. But I love the fact that you talk about communication skills and negotiation as opposed to, you know, fighting fair. Because to me, and anybody who listens to the show knows that I don't like the term fighting. To me, that gives people permission to give in to those harder, harsher emotions. Like you're saying, if you're angry all the time, you're not going to be able to negotiate. You're not going to be able to talk. And so I love that distinction that you made.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, absolutely. I don't like using the word, just as you say, just the use of the word does give permission to indulge, and it is an indulgence. When you use your anger to punish the other person or to control them. We like to speak in terms of, we don't even talk about, we use the phrase managing conflict. Because, you know, conflict is very, very likely to happen. Differences are inevitable.
Yep.
And conflict is pretty hard to avoid, But what you can do is you can manage it, you can limit it so that you can intervene when those differences come up and they get heated, and you can put in some interventions in the interaction that can cool it down so that it doesn't get to the danger destructive point.
Right, and what people need to know is that there are skills and tools that they can learn and use to do
exactly.
That it isn't, you know, some people are, like my husband is just born, you know, very naturally easygoing. I've had to learn. I've had to learn how to manage, just like Linda, you were talking about, I've had to learn how to manage my own anger. And I can tell people it actually is possible. And I want to remind you that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm Leslie Dorries, and I'm talking with fellow relationship counselors Linda and Charlie Bloom about their new book that lays bare the challenges they faced and overcame in their own marriage. And as I've often said, marriage is the most challenging relationship you will ever have, and too many of us try to go it alone. And even the most knowledgeable and well-intentioned couples can get off track. So if your marriage isn't what you want it to be, I encourage you to take action today. Don't wait until tomorrow. Don't wait until the weekend. Give me a call or send me an email and take advantage of my free, no-obligation, Create Your Happily Ever After Marriage session. You can reach me at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can reach me at area code 919-924-0463. And I want to get back to talking to the Blooms about how they manage to, I mean, you guys have to read this book. It's truly amazing. You, I mean, as I'm reading this book, I'm thinking, oh, my God, how are they ever going to put this back together again? So it was, like, really nice to be able to go, oh, that's how they did it. And one of the things you guys talked about was a fear-based versus love-based relationship. So what is each one of those, and how can a couple, like, do what you did and move from one to the other? Because I guess, you know, because we all want to be in the love-based relationship.
Well, that's what everybody wants.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, even the people who aren't really wanting to have long-term committed partnership, maybe that's not in the cards for them, but everybody wants love. So to move from that place where we're defended, where we're closed, where we may be manipulative out of the fear that comes with not feeling safe in the relationship, we can learn so much from those breakdowns, because often the arguments that we get in, whether they're this smoldering, cold kind that are filled with withdrawal and lots of tension, or whether they're overt with name-calling and threats and all those other unskillful means, they're divisive. And sometimes people don't connect the dots that when they're angry, when they're resentful, when they shut down, when they're attacking and judging and criticizing the other person, even in their mind if they don't let it come flying out their mouth,
mm-hmm.
that there's fear and pain underneath those feelings, that that's just the tip of the iceberg. And underneath is all that fear and pain. And when people get in touch with that, it can be a whole new conversation, starting with themselves. They can see the part of themselves that wants to open, that wants to be committed, that wants to be forgiving, that wants to be patient and tolerant, fighting with the part of themselves that's so hurting and fearful and that doesn't want to open, because there's a part that wants to open and a part that doesn't. And that intra-personal conflict manifests itself in an inter-personal conflict.
And I love that description, because...
Yes.
Because, you know, a lot of times we never go past, you know, I'm just angry. I'm furious at something that's just happened, as opposed to, well, why am I so angry about it? And what's really underneath it? And quite frequently it is, you know, fear of, you know, being abandoned or not being good enough or not being lovable, or whatever that fear is, and
that's
then
right.
You know, it's we tend to create the very thing that we fear.
That's exactly right, and fear of being exploited, and fear of being left, and fear of being taken advantage of, and fear that we'll open up and disclose something very vulnerable, and they'll go blab it to somebody else and violate confidentiality. There are so many fears, and there's so many sore spots that are left over from family of origin, because, you know, if you live long enough to become an adult, even if you had parents, there are some wounds there, and your partner is going to go banging inadvertently to those sore places. And a lot of people have adult relationships where they've been exploited and hurt and let down and abandoned and betrayed. And so people have these scary, you know, fearful places. And when our partner activates those spots in us, that's golden opportunity to learn more about ourselves. Golden opportunity to lean into the challenge and to have curiosity and wonder to see, what is it? What is that sore place? What is that frightened place? What is that painful place? And if you have an agreement with your partner that you're going to heal those broken places in each other, that's a good contract.
Right, and that takes me into, I mean, because you actually do mention in the book two related ideas that seem to be right along with what you just were talking about, and it seemed to be really key to writing your guys' relationship, and that's the first one you say, and these are quotes, learning to be vulnerable and honest built strength, and by taking responsibility for your own contributions, trust deepened. So that, to me, I think, are examples of that love-based relationship you're talking about. But what makes these two concepts so critical?
You know, I think that we created hell realms for ourselves because we didn't even know that it was possible to speak the truth of our experience without the blame and judgment in it.
Okay.
We both had the same blind spot during this difficult, shadowy time because we both were in agreement that we had to get it off our chest, as if, you know, disciplining ourselves and holding that tension inside until we could find a way to speak it constructively was going to grow a tumor, you know, or something. And we both really had that same blind spot. We got some good help. I will be grateful all my days for the people who helped us to understand that there is a way in which you can speak the truth of your experience, but you can speak it in a way that the other person is more likely to hear you. If you can speak from the vulnerable place in your experience, I feel so lonely for you, I miss you, rather than what the hell's the matter with you, you had these children and now you're never here to bring them up with me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you can speak about, I'm really scared that we're not going to be able to come through this challenge with an intact family, and I really don't want us to break up, but I'm not sure what else to try. That's a whole different conversation than we indulged way long because we were ignorant. We didn't know how to not play that blame game. And both of us were convinced that we were right, that the other person was, you know, completely in the wrong, but we had some people that trusted who helped me to see how I was getting in my own way.
Well, and I love that example. I love that statement because we do get in our own ways, but it's really hard to see that. And, you know, I've had people say to me in my office, it's like, well, I've been saying that for years. I'm going, yes, but your partner can hear it from me because I'm not trying to get them to do anything. And you know, so there's, and the emotional attachment, that emotional fear, that emotional connection isn't there with me. That's not to say I don't care about my clients, but it's not the same thing as, you know, oh, my partner's saying this because they're trying to manipulate or control or whatever, or they're right and I'm wrong kind of thing. And I think that's a critical component to what you do with the people who come to see you, and what I do with my clients is to give them that space to be able to hear stuff that they'll never hear if they either just go to their friends or just try to duke it out, literally duke it out with each other. So what do you, guys recommend as to, because I know that, I know that in the book you talk about the culture that even though you were in Northern California, which is, you know, everybody in California and New York has therapists, you guys were seriously, I don't want to say prevented, but discouraged from seeking outside help.
Well, the culture that I was working in really did not see therapy as in a particularly positive light. It was viewed as something that people need when they don't handle their lives more responsibly and effectively. So for somebody who, as I was in a leadership role in that company, it would not look good for me to be getting therapy. And even though I was a therapist, I had been professionally before I started working, before we moved to California and I started working in that company, I had absorbed some of those beliefs about therapy, and I was also concerned about how I would be viewed in that context. So it was it was very challenging, because one of the things that both Lynn and I learned in the process was that for most couples, there comes a time or times more than once when your best efforts are not enough to cut it, and you need to bring in some outside help. You know, just like sometimes, you know, you try to take care of yourself, but sometimes you need a doctor's involvement. You know, you want to maintain your house, but sometimes you need to bring in a plumber or an electrician. You know, we can't all do everything. We can't all be experts at everything, and particularly with relationships where very few of us have had the training, the experience, the education to know how to manage some of these things.
Well, and I think that's a critical component, because I've had, you know, one of my all-time favorite clients, and I tell this story a lot, was, you know, she came bouncing into my office one day, and she said she had an epiphany. And I said, well, what was it? And she said, relationships aren't natural. And I burst out laughing. I said, well, where did you get the idea that they were? I mean, but that's what everybody thinks, because it's so easy to fall in love, and that they don't think that there's any skill or anything that they can learn, because we're in relationships all our lives, they're natural, and it's like sort of, but that doesn't necessarily. I mean, you know, I tell people, well, so is running. Running's a natural thing to do, but you better believe that Usain Bolt had coaches to help him be better at it.
Yeah.
People spend a lot of money going to all kinds of professional conferences to up-level their career. They get life coaches and business consultants, and they spend thousands of dollars on that. But somehow when it comes to romantic partnership, the belief is that we should know how to do this. And when they're up against all that, they've tried everything that they know, they somehow feel ashamed and embarrassed to reach out and ask for help. Like there's something, you know, innately defective about them. But I think we all need models and mentors to have great relationships, if that's what we really want to have. And to put some time and effort, maybe you have to go to two or three or four marriage counselors before you find somebody who really resonates with you and can help you. Maybe you have to go to a number of workshops and sample different people's work and read their books. But there is a lot of really good help available. And it breaks my heart that most of the people who get divorced don't even go to one marriage counseling session. And people who do reach out and ask for marriage counseling, they on average have been suffering for over 6 years before they make the call. That's another statistic that breaks my heart, because there is some good help available if people will tell the truth that they're at the end of what they know, and big surprise, they need some more skills, they need some more guidance, they need to consult with the graduating class ahead of them that can give them that guidance that they need.
Absolutely. And speaking of the guidance that they need, I would like you to please share where the listeners might be able to get some guidance in the form of your book and your relationship seminars and workshops.
Well, our book is available online through Barnes & Noble, their website, through Amazon. It can be purchased there. For other resources that we offer, our website is simply called Bloomwork. That's B-L-O-O-M-W-O-R-K, one word, .com. And there's a huge variety of resources available on that. People can look at some of our video clips. We have several hundred blogs that we've written over the last several years that are available on a number of different aspects of relationships, ways to get in touch with us if you are interested in any of our services, which includes what we consider a fairly unique service that we call intensives. And an intensive is a 1 or 2 day, very full 8-hour day in which couples come and they work with us, sort of like having their own private seminar where we help them to identify what the practices are that they need to strengthen, and what the qualities are and what the practices are that will help them to develop that in order to be competent and successful in their marriages, their relationships.
Okay, so I just want to remind people that you said
it's probably the best place to go.
Bloomworks.com, B-L-O-O-M.
Not with a plural. Bloomwork.
Oh, Bloomwork. Okay, thank you very much.
If you go to Bloomworks.com, it's going to take you to a nursery, a flower nursery.
Right. And then again, the name of the book, which I highly recommend, is That Which Doesn't Kill Us, How One Couple Became Stronger at the Broken Places. Because every marriage runs into the same types of challenges, but because no one talks about them and there is no relationship 101 requirement that anybody has to take before saying I do, too many couples think they are the only ones struggling. And love helps, but it alone will not get you through the challenges. Getting accurate information and backing early on is a good option, but as you've heard today, it's never too late. So what kind of support do you and your partner need? And a bigger question is, what will you do to get it? Hopefully, you'll keep listening to the show and getting some more wonderful exposure to people like the Blooms. And so until next week, stay loving.